In the matter of Baskin versus Martinez, may we please have appearances of counsel? Welcome, counsel. Mr. Gallinov, please go ahead.
Your Honor, if I may, the first thing I want to do is thank the court for accommodating me and my difficulty in rescheduling this afternoon. It is something I will be grateful for forever. So thank you very much. Now, certain language from the decision in the appellate division is as follows. This disputed fact alone should have precluded the entry of summary judgment. Your Honor, I suggest that this focus on the fact that there was one disputed fact in all of the facts that present themselves in this case is the reason why I'm asking, the reason why I suggest that the majority decision was incorrect, and I'm asking for it to be reversed. The focus on one disputed fact is contrary to the standard by which a question of qualified immunity is to be determined. Qualified immunity is to be determined after an analysis of the totality of the circumstances and not simply just one disputed fact. When a court makes a decision that an individual, an officer in this case, is in fact qualifiably immune, it is not necessary for the court to then enter summary judgment in that individual's favor, but instead the circumstance presents itself that he is immune not only from judgment, but as the court is well aware, he is immune from the litigation process. So therefore, once a decision is made that an individual has qualified immunity, an action can be dismissed and should be dismissed as opposed to rendering a summary judgment. This is one of the reasons why in cases wherein litigants are seeking a determination with regard to qualified immunity, that they are encouraged to file their motions early on in the process because, as I said, the immunity is as to the litigation process and not just an immunity from a judgment. And this is why I suggest that it is improper to apply the standard that we apply to negligence actions to questions of qualified immunity. And I suggest that is what the appellate division's majority opinion did. They simply looked at whether or not there was a disputed issue of fact as opposed to the totality of the circumstances and, as I said, indicated that that one fact alone is why summary judgment should have been denied. When in fact, if there are disputed issues of fact, these disputed issues of fact, recognized in the majority opinion, can be submitted to the jury and determined by a jury, but once that determination is made, it then goes back to being a question of law to be determined by the court and not simply proceeding with the normal jury deliberations. My experience has been that when there are disputed issues of fact in this type of case, the facts are submitted to the jury makes its finding. If those findings are in favor of the individual seeking immunity, the action is then dismissed at that point. The jury does nothing further in terms of deliberating on the case, and in fact that the question of determining the facts is something that is done prior to the issue being submitted to the jury for their final verdict. Now, the case law relied upon by the majority opinion deals with a couple of instances where facts were in dispute. But I would suggest to the court that the difference between those cases, which were relied upon by the majority, and what we are dealing with here is that those cases, Brown versus State and Schneider versus Simonini, were not circumstances faced by this particular individual on this particular occasion. These were cases concerning whether or not there was enough time to get a warrant, for example, and in another case, whether the information relied upon by the officer was sufficient to have identified the individual involved in the investigation. In those instances, those instances are entirely different from the circumstances we are presented with in this case. This is a case where immediate action had to be taken by the police officer, and he had an immediate action had to be taken by the police officer who was facing a fatal opponent. There is no question that he was armed. There is no question everyone knew he was armed. There is no question that in his effort to escape, he dropped the gun and picked it up and took it with him. Now, there is also no question that at the time that he was shot, he did not have the gun, but the officer didn't know that. And I think that the a critical factor in determining whether or not this police officer acted in a reasonable manner, which is the standard that this court has to apply, is that he did not draw his weapon until Mr. Baskin went behind the house. He knew he was armed from the beginning, according to his testimony. He clearly saw him drop the weapon during the course of the attempted escape. But even though he was chasing after an armed felon, he didn't draw his weapon. In fact, early on in the circumstances, you'll recall the plaintiff in his effort when he was beginning to try to escape, he was cut off by one vehicle, and he attempted to hurt the officers in the vehicle behind him by backing up and ramming into them. At that point in time, the officer did nothing that would have caused physical harm to Mr. Baskin. He commenced the chase, and it was only when he lost sight of him and he was behind the house that the officer drew his weapon. This, as I suggest to you, is indicative of the actions of a reasonable and a prudent police officer, which is the standard that has to be applied to this circumstance.
Let's expand upon that just a little. Assume all the facts that you've recounted for us, the ramming, the flight, seeing the defendant in the criminal case pull out a weapon, are all, as presented to us, yes, all true. If the plaintiff was standing still with his hands in the air and had nothing in his hands, was it objectively reasonable for the police officer to use deadly force? Is that a question that needs to be resolved?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, is that a question in this case? Because he wasn't standing still, according to the testimony of the detective and the eyewitness. He was turning around.
All right.
If he was to answer your question, if he was standing still, for example, Judge, I would suggest to you that Mr. Baskin would have been much better served if he had been standing still and raised his hands and just looked at the police officer as he came around the corner. I would suggest to you, in those circumstances, we wouldn't be here.
Fair enough.
But the fact is, he didn't do that.
So add to that he's turning around. Turning around, hands empty, hands in the air. Is it objectively reasonable, or does that determination need to be made before we can go further?
I think that the actions of the officer in this circumstances, when considered with all of the facts that we know, were in fact objectively reasonable. Yes, it was reasonable, and that is what the police officer is required to do, Your Honor. He is required to act in a reasonable manner. He's not required to be perfect.
Is it reasonable? Look, he may have been permitted to shoot him at some other point during this chase.
Yes, well, sir.
But assuming the truth of his testimony,
whose testimony, Your Honor?
The plaintiff's.
Okay, I just want to be sure.
He said, I had my hands up over my ears, okay? And I was turning and facing the officer. The other eyewitness said he had his hands up. Your client said he had his back turned to me and his hands were at 90 degrees.
Yes, sir. Okay.
That's a huge dispute. If you accept the testimony given by the defendant, his claim is, at that particular point, the police officer is shooting an unarmed person with hands in the air, nothing in his hands, who's surrendering. Now, the jury doesn't have to believe that, okay? Or, and the jury can believe, even if he did those things, that, you know, the police officer, because this was, you know, fast-paced events and he was nervous, they can find whatever they want. But assuming everything that he's saying, why isn't that an issue that must be decided by the jury? And quite frankly, that qualified immunity rolls into precisely what, in a 1983 case, the jury decides in an excessive force case. If that goes to the jury, the special interrogatory and the actual substantive claim are virtually one and the same.
Judge,
if I know this law correctly. Go ahead.
Sir, if in fact, as Your Honor says, he had nothing in his hands and he had his hands raised.
As he's claiming.
As he's claiming.
That's his claim.
And the police officer sees him turning around.
The police officer said he was turning around, I couldn't see his hands because they were 90 degrees. He says my hands were over my head. And he doesn't say he's turning around. But his hands are over his head. Nothing in his hands. Jury can believe that or disbelieve it. But for our purposes here, we got to believe it, okay?
I understand that, Judge. And if we believe that and the officer still shot him, it has to be considered in context of the totality of the circumstances. To focus on one particular issue is exactly what the plaintiff, Mr. Baskin, wants the court to do, and that is not the standard. The standard is if you look at what this police officer did.
You know,
if you believe the plaintiff, in this case, the defendant in the criminal case, but the plaintiff here, even if you believe the plaintiff, it's dark, he's turning. The officer doesn't know what he has in his hands.
Right.
And that's undisputed because the officer's the only person that can say whether he knew or not.
Right.
Is it reasonable for the officer to wait and look to see if he actually has a gun or while he's turning? A bullet, muscle velocity, 682 miles an hour, travels 1,500 feet per second.
Yes, sir. It's not reasonable.
Is it reasonable for the officer to wait and say, well, maybe if he has a gun, I can jump out of the way?
No, sir.
You believe everything the plaintiff said, that he was turning, his hands were empty, the officer doesn't know that. Is it reasonable for the officer to wait and check when he already knows that the individual had a gun in his hand at some point?
Your Honor, as you suggest, if he waits and checks, he possibly dies. And it is not reasonable to make him do that. He is not required to be perfect in these circumstances. He is required to act as a reasonable police officer. And while it is certainly not dispositive for our purposes, we must not forget, and one of the factors in this case is, that this matter was investigated by the county prosecutor's office. And they found that he was acting, they found in a way that he wasn't charged. I won't go beyond that to say they did in fact find that
people
he was
commit,
acting in a reasonable
crime.
Manner.
People commit crime. Look, there are plenty of crimes that are committed by people, okay, and they get convicted. And yet they may surrender. They run down an alleyway. They know the court, they put their hands up, and a police officer under those circumstances isn't permitted to shoot the person and kill the person merely because he previously committed a crime.
I'm sorry, Judge.
If those are the facts that a jury believes, and I'm saying that, okay, because there are disputed facts here, if those are the facts that are believed by a jury.
But, Judge, in this instance, it's not a question of whether what the police officer did or didn't do, and if the person was or wasn't armed. We know he was armed. We knew he was armed until he went behind the house, and there is no dispute.
Even if he was previously armed, if he's got his hands in the air, and you believe the defendant, there's nothing in his hands. The fact that he was previously armed doesn't give a police officer the right to shoot and kill the person if he isn't. Presently armed,
but it does.
Is that the standard? Where the officer is entitled to shoot someone? It's a standard where they act in an objectively reasonable fashion, not knowing at one point the individual had a gun, not knowing he didn't have it, not knowing whether it was in his hands or not. As the individual's turning around, whether he should have waited a long period of time to see it in the darkness if he had a gun. Is that really what the issue here? Not whether he has the right to shoot people.
Yes, Judge. The issue is whether or not his actions under all the circumstances, what he believed under all the circumstances, were the actions of a reasonable police officer.
Can you clarify?
He doesn't have to. I'm sorry, Judge.
Please finish your answer.
He doesn't have to be exact, and we shouldn't focus on one fact.
Can you clarify one fact nonetheless? The officer, as well as the eyewitness who backs up the plaintiff, say the plaintiff was turning. What does plaintiff say about that?
My recollection, Judge, is the plaintiff says he had his hands up and he was turning. Yes. And he says his hands were empty.
Does he as well say that he was turning?
The plaintiff, that's my recollection, yes, Judge.
And Ms. Johnson says that as well.
I'm not as clear on, Judge.
Ms. Johnson does.
She says it twice.
I mean, we have to accept her testimony, and it's certainly not for us here to say she was or wasn't telling the truth, but
no,
she was
but
some
the point
distance
is,
away,
the
and she was not clear on a lot of details.
She gives you what you want.
Beg your pardon?
She says he was turning. The officer says he was turning. My question was simply, what does the plaintiff say?
Does he say
he was stationary or not? And I can tell you can't give us a citation to it. Perhaps your colleague will be able to.
And perhaps Mr. Mellitz will recall better than I, Judge. My recollection is the plaintiff was turning. It was after he had thrown the pistol over the fence, and he was turning because the officer wasn't, I mean, there wasn't a lot of time in between when he lost sight of him and when he was approaching the rear of the house. So, as I said, in response to your question, my recollection is the plaintiff says he was turning back toward the police officer with his hands, he says, up, the officer says raising, or, and the officer says he recalls seeing what...
And the lighting was not good.
I'm sorry?
The lighting was not good.
That is correct, Your Honor.
It's all happening very quickly.
Right.
He sees a gun, and he has no way of knowing that that gun has been disposed of around that corner.
Exactly, Your Honor. What the police officer reasonably believed was that the individual he saw, number one, with the gun when he first started chasing him, and number two, an individual who stopped to pick up the gun that he dropped and take it with him behind him, he saw the individual, armed individual, turning toward him.
One of the distinct disputes here is where were his hands. Your client is saying, I couldn't see his hands. They were at a 90-degree angle. Both the witness and the plaintiff here say his hands were over his head. The plaintiff said his hands were empty and open, okay, up and around his ears. And he thought, and as far as he was concerned, he was surrendering to the police. That's his account. Someone can reject that account. That's his account. That's the account that we have to accept for the purposes of this motion. Yes?
We have to accept that's what his testimony is. Yes, Your Honor. And I suggest...
Tell me if I'm mistaken. Your client said, I couldn't see his hands because they were at 90 degrees. Two other witnesses said he had his hands over his head.
Yes, that's
a dispute, correct?
That's right. That's right. Judge, there can be disputed issues of fact in these cases, but... When the court analyzes the totality of the circumstances, that's when you come to the point where the court must determine whether or not Officer Martinez acted in the manner of a reasonable police officer.
But aren't you asking us to say that as a matter of law, regardless of what the officer knew about or could see, that his hands were over his head and empty, that it was reasonable to use deadly force in this situation?
That is what, yes,
yes. That's what you're asking us to
rule. That is exactly what I'm asking you to say, and that is what I think the record in this case supports, because we have to start from when the plaintiff was attempting to escape and rammed into the police officers, and then they started chasing him. And all of those factors put them in a situation where...
So it really comes down to not saying it's just one disputed fact, but whether or not this court believes this disputed fact is the critical fact in determining the reasonableness of the officer's use of force here.
Well, Judge, I mean, the court could look and make a determination that this is the critical fact, but I would suggest this fact should hold no more weight than all the other facts, because we're talking about a set of facts, not one fact.
But at what point in time does the determination of objective reasonableness be made? It's made at that moment in time with the viewing of the person turning around with his hands raised, either with something in it or not, right?
I'm sorry, Judge.
When is the point in time that we're assessing the objective reasonableness of the officer's action and use of force? It's not at any of the earlier points in time. It's at the point in time in which the force is used, correct?
I disagree, Judge. It has to start from the beginning because you have to analyze the totality of the circumstances. So you have to look at how the police officer acted from the beginning to the end. To go just to the end and say he shot him and there is evidence that he was unarmed or he had nothing in his hands at the time, brings me back to the initial point that I was making. That's a question of a negligent summary judgment action.
There are plenty of, at least there are a couple of courts, the cases that I've read, that dispute the way you want us to analyze this. Cases where there were very serious or violent crimes committed and where the person who committed those offenses then was raising his hands up in surrender and deadly force was used. And the courts have said, Second Circuit and other, those are cases that have to go to the jury. Because that disputed fact, and the person has his hands up in the air and no longer appears to be a threat, if that's what the jury believes, that's at the point when the officer cannot use deadly force. Even if deadly force could have been justified earlier, when there was an objectively reasonable threat.
Excuse me, Your Honor. The qualified immunity is for the benefit of all but the plainly incompetent. And I would suggest to you, Your Honors, that if you look at the facts in this case, it would be very, very difficult. In fact, I would suggest impossible to say that if you look at all the actions of this police officer that day when this happened, that these actions were the actions of a plainly incompetent police officer. If they are not the actions of a plainly incompetent police officer, he is protected by qualified immunity.
The plaintiff's burden includes a clearly established right. And to prove that the reasonable officer in the same situation clearly would understand that his actions were unlawful. So when we look at all of the facts there, the plaintiff, in order to survive summary judgment, has to have a prima facie case that would demonstrate that a reasonable official would understand that what he was doing was violative of that right.
Right.
And
yes,
your point is that with uncertainty with respect to the final moments of this encounter, given all of the facts before, the presence of a gun, the previous attempt at an assault on the officer, et cetera, and the dark, poor lighting, and the very fast pace means that he did not understand that he was violating a clearly established right.
That's correct, sir. That issue was addressed in the dissenting opinion.
And let me.
Yes, sir.
So I take it what you're saying, and you agree. You agree with the dissent, but that just be, assume for a minute, I think you started to say this, assume the plaintiff's version is true,
right,
and the witnesses are correct. He's turning with his hands up around his ears, and the officer in the dark after this chase, after being assaulted, after seeing the gun, reacts and shoots him. Hands are up by his ears. There's nothing in them, but the officer, it
right.
is dark. And the witness simply says, I didn't see anything in his hands. The question is whether that act, as a matter of law, is reasonable.
Yes, sir.
Or not reasonable.
That's
your
correct.
Argument is, it's reasonable, which the dissent said, a reasonable mistake does not waive immunity.
Exactly, Judge. He doesn't have to be correct. He has to be reasonable.
A reasonable
and
mistake.
And under all the facts and circumstances, what he did was reasonable. He feared for his life.
Did this occur in the early afternoon? Everyone's talking about the dark. When did these events occur? Now that everyone's talking about this, that it was dark. Wasn't this in the early afternoon on September 11th, 2012?
I thought it was the evening, Judge. I don't recall it, to tell you the truth.
Well, then, if you can't recall, then you can't say it's dark, and no one can say it's dark.
I came from the bench, Judge.
Okay. I believe it was the early afternoon.
Yeah, I thought there was a reference by the witness that it was dark, or she couldn't. I may be wrong.
I recall that the witness said she had been coming home from work, and I assume she works and comes home in the afternoon. But I couldn't tell you what time to say whether or not it was or wasn't dark at that point.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, Your Honor, that's it. Thank you,
Mellon.
Your Honor, first of all, I would mention that, so we get it straight, our complaint that was filed indicates that this all happened at 1:29 p.m. or in the afternoon rather than at night in terms of...
Would you mind just keeping your voice up a bit, please?
Pardon?
Would you mind keeping your voice up?
Oh, I'm sorry, yes.
Thank you.
Now... Our position is that the matter should be presented to the jury because there is this dispute of fact, and that the situation for the plaintiff is he is saying that he's raised his hands, he turned around, There is nothing in his hands. We have the plaintiff and two independent witnesses who indicated that there was nothing in his hands. And unfortunately, he was shot. The defendant contends that I thought that he had something in his hand, and he shot him. It is submitted that it is for the jury to make a determination, and that is a jury matter. That is basically it. I understand that after the fact, it's found that he didn't have anything in his hands. The gun had been thrown away. And I understand that the police officer didn't realize that. He contended he didn't realize it. But the fact is, it still is a disputed issue of fact. And we submit, Your Honor, that the trial judge should not decide such facts. It should be for the jury to do so. And that is qualification of deadly force, having a question of deadly force raises the stakes here, but it is still something that should be set forth to the jury. And it's basically the situation. I'm narrowing it down, but as a practical matter, I submit it is that narrow. As far as the plaintiff, he didn't say he had turned. He had like this. As far as the issues of the court as to whether the defendant should have shot him, we submit that our law is that he shouldn't have shot him until he was reasonably certain that he had a gun or some other way of threatening him. And that is not the case here. This is a case that really is for the jury. And I apologize if I'm too short, but...
That's all right. I know you reserved 5 minutes. Are you open to questions at this point?
No, Your Honor.
You don't want any questions?
Any questions you
okay.
have,
we
yet.
Can interrupt
I have
your
five. We can go home now?
I have no question. No problem. You go ahead and ask questions. I'm sorry.
I want to focus on the whether there's a dispute as to whether plaintiff was turning around. We have the police officer and the eyewitness saying that he was. Does your client say anything about that? Either way?
I believe, Your Honor, the testimony was that he was like this.
I don't understand what that means. Was he stationary? Let me be specific.
He had started to turn around, and specifically in our complaint, it says on or about September 11, 2012, at approximately 1:29 p.m., the plaintiff was standing with his hands up in the air, facing the defendant, and he had no weapon and was surrendering to him.
Your client indicated during deposition testimony or pre-colloquy that, in fact, when he dropped the gun, the officer saw him pick up the gun and continue running.
Earlier, yes.
Okay, is it safe to assume that the officer that gave him knowledge that your client was armed as he was running away? Because your client admits he saw him pick up the gun again.
Yes, the police officer thought he was armed.
Right. Now?
When he was running away.
Right, so the officer knows he's armed.
Yes.
He's chasing. Suddenly he stops, whether he turns or not. Is it your position the officer at that point had the duty to look, make sure he didn't have a gun, when he has an individual who's been running, who's already dropped the gun and picked it up ostensibly to use or at least to keep the gun, that he should have been looking and checking to make sure before he fired a shot into the abdomen?
And if
that's so, isn't it for the court to determine whether the right was clearly established, not the jury?
No.
Isn't that what our case Murillo says? Isn't that and there's a two-part test, and isn't essentially the officer's actions may be unreasonable under a constitutional standard, but he's still entitled to immunity if he or she has a reasonable mistaken understanding as to whether a particular amount of force is legal. And at this point, assuming There were no witnesses said your client was turned around. It was all just your client said, I was turned around. He knows he stopped to pick up a gun. He's in the back. He's chasing. He knows the danger of guns. He knows officers are shot every day. And your client didn't initially just give up and when he ran. Now he's cornered by a fence, so he can't run. Is it unreasonable for the officer when he sees that the individual can't tell what's in his hands to shoot?
I don't think, Your Honor, that it's reasonable for the officer to, when a person is turning around like this, to just shoot.
Well, that's part of the disputed facts, right? Because the police officer says that when your client began to turn around, he saw him carrying a black object in his hand and fired one shot into his abdomen. And then later, when they were searching the area, they find a cell phone around the defendant. In fact, they find two. So we have disputed facts here, but we have the police officer saying, you know, he raised his hand and he turned around. I saw something in his hand. It looked like a gun. Turns out it was probably a cell phone. Doesn't that give him some justification here to defend himself?
I believe, Your Honor, it shows that there's a disputed issue of fact and that it should be for the jury.
But is it unreasonable for him, whether he was mistaken or not about the cell phone, once he saw a black object in the hand, is it a reason for him to, at that point, fire and protect himself? Or should he wait till the shot's fired at him and hopefully duck and then return fire? That's the issue, whether there was a gun in his hands or not. Is it unreasonable for the officer to act in that fashion when your client was turning around and he saw something black in his hands and he knew from beforehand that he had stopped and picked up a gun?
I submit, Your Honor, that it is a in-between area that can be reasonable. That's reasonable. And it is when...
And what determines the in-between? The speed of the bullet coming out of your client's hands if, in fact, he had a gun?
No.
Five football fields in a second?
It is, what is in-between is that he has, in my opinion, that is the law that he has to, when he sees my client with his hands up, all these facts known, has to say, drop anything, words to the effect, drop anything you have in your hand. And because he has to be reasonably certain that my client has something in his hand.
Your position is, if the jury believes your client, then he had nothing in his hands.
Correct.
It's in daylight. An objectively reasonable officer should know when someone has their hands open above their heads, they have nothing in their hands. No cell phone, no nothing. If they believe your client, if they don't believe your client, that's a different issue. That's what you want to go to the jury. Am I correct?
Yes. So that's why I want to know what your client said. He was deposed. Did he say that he turned around or that he was facing the officer standing opposite him when the officer comes upon him in the back?
My recollection, Your Honor, is that he had not completed turning around. He was sort of in between.
That he was in the midst of turning.
Yes.
Thank you.
Well, he couldn't have been. He was shot in the abdomen. He had completed his turn. He was turning, and the officer waited. But when he saw something in his hands, that's when the officer shot. Because if he had shot him in the back, he wouldn't have gone into the abdomen.
Whether he was shot this way or in some way, it had to be shot. Yes, he was shot in the abdomen.
Anything else you'd like to present?
No.
Thank you, counsel. Okay. We'll take the matter under advisement.